What about the victim? How did you identify her as Leona McPherson?
Fingerprints, believe it or not. But I don't think you're going to believe it. It was insane.
It sounded insane from the report I read, but please tell me in your own words.
So, we came up blank on ID. No eyewitnesses came forward. Nobody responded to the posters we put up. Nothing. And this was 4 or 5 years before the National Fingerprint Database, so we couldn't exactly run her through that. But it was still standard procedure to take the prints anyway. Just in case they happened to match any other active cases, you know? Like a burglary or something. So we took the prints. And we sent them to the lab. And some intern or something just sat there day in and day out comparing prints to each other.
Oh.
It took him over a week to find a hit. The damn morgue lost the body twice while we were waiting.
They lost the body?
Or forgot they had it, yeah. I heard the second time it happened. They opened the door to put another body in and found this one already in there. Yeah, scared the hell out of them until they found the paperwork. But who knows if that's true or not? No idea how it happened twice. The upshot is, after about a week of looking, somebody matched our dead body to a missing person's case in Beverly Hills. The detective on that one, Ortega or something.
Ortiz.
That's the one. Screw that guy. Did everything he could to sabotage that investigation. But he did take some prints off a glass in the hotel room. And then I guess he just forgot to destroy them when he ruined everything else. A good thing, too. Because it was a perfect match.
So, even after the body was found, there are few, if any, answers. Was she kidnapped from her room? Nobody reported a homeless Robin Hood cosplayer at the Roosevelt Hotel. Did she leave on her own? How did she end up in Colonia, which is hours away, even in good traffic? And all of these questions, sooner or later, come swirling back to Detective Jimmy Ortiz. Why didn't he look for her? Why didn't he ask for help? Why did he do so well at some things and so poorly at others? Because there are a lot of contradictions in his behavior. He took copious notes in his 3 reports, but then never followed them up. He collected evidence and even submitted fingerprints, but then never did anything about them. He wasn't hiding the case, but he wasn't drawing any attention to it either, which brings us back to the question I asked before. Was he corrupt, or was he simply incompetent? As you heard from Detective Hensley, there were a lot of people asking that question, even back in 94. In fact, Ortiz was the center of a massive internal investigation stemming from, but not directly related to this case. It's confusing, so bear with me. When Hensley and his team connected their Jane Doe to Leona, they realized that Ortiz had been in the briefings where the Jane Doe's picture was shown, but he never piped up. Neither had Derek Malone, who filed the other one of those 4 missing person reports. Worse yet, when the department looked a little deeper, they found that neither Ortiz nor Malone had logged a single hour on the Leona McPherson case after filing their reports, and by then it had been more than 2 weeks. They spent literally no time looking for her. Contacted nobody, put out 0 alerts, nothing. So it looked an awful lot like one or both of them were involved somehow, possibly in the crime itself, and definitely in covering it up. But as the internal investigation went on, it drifted away from Leona, I've got some of the minutes from their meetings. The LAPD is meticulous about record keeping, and over the course of the process, they talk less and less about Leona and more about vague generalities. It's almost like they forgot Leona was involved, which makes no sense. What makes even less sense is that eventually they called off the whole investigation based on a lack of evidence, which is nuts because I'm sitting on a mountain of evidence and I wasn't even there. And let's not forget about Catherine McPherson, Leona's mother, who looks awfully suspicious as well. So, that's where we're going next. Ortiz, Malone, and Catherine.
Derek Malone was born in Fresno in 1964 and started working for the LAPD as a beat cop in 1987.
That's not actually a news program or whatever. I have literally no audio for any of these people because there are no existing recordings and they all refuse to talk to me. But I feel like I'm talking too much, so I asked my roommate, Sophie Kwan, to record some of this for me.
Peace.
Just to break up the monotony a little bit. Shoestring budget, remember?
He received several commendations for his work and became a detective in 1993.
Can we maybe dial it back a bit? Just like, I'm trying to make this like a serious crime podcast. Like crime
and I sound too amazing.
You sound like you're selling used cars on TikTok.
Wow, way harsh, Ty. But fine. I can give you the boring version.
How about just the sedate, respectable version?
Malone was married with a little baby girl, the apple of our father's eye.
I'm not going to be able to use any of this.
Use all of it, and I will tutor you for your geology general ed this weekend.
Fine, but you have to do it normal or I'm 100% backing out.
Deal. Getting into character. Malone was married with a 2-year-old girl. His family lived in South Pasadena. Prior to the internal investigation surrounding Leona McPherson, he had no irregularities in his record and a number of high-profile arrests. He helped catch the serial killer George Butler in 1992 and serial arsonist Philip Dumont in 93. He was exactly the kind of detective who should have excelled at finding a missing celebrity and then tracking down her killer.
Jimmy Ortiz was a few decades older, but equally qualified. He was instrumental in a number of big-deal drug busts in the 80s, and the only bad marks on his record came from other officers who condemned him for, quote, going soft on rioters during both the King riot and the Watts riot. And that's a whole nother can of worms, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say that someone who refused to attack civilians is, at the very least, a cop with a solid moral compass. Maybe it's more than that. I don't know. Both detectives seem at least superficially to be on the up and up. Their records speak to both competence and goodness, for lack of a better term. So there's no history of bad calls or bad behavior before this event, and I wasn't able to find any evidence of major infractions after it either. No spiral into corruption, no sudden rise of questionable work. I was even able to pull a credit history for both of them. And yes, that's scary, and you should do everything you can to protect your information online. And neither detective showed any sudden windfall of money or a notable change in purchasing behavior. So it doesn't look like they were paid off either. But, as I assume they say in crime journalism, just because someone doesn't look like a criminal doesn't mean they're not a criminal. There's no way they say that in journalism. It's like a triple negative. Just because someone looks innocent doesn't mean they are innocent. Much better. Plenty of people live perfectly normal lives on the surface while indulging in horrible activities in private. So, let's look at the evidence surrounding the crime itself, helpfully collected by the LAPD's internal investigation. Detective Hensley was there for most of it.
So I remember they both had good alibis.
Yeah, they did. The night Leona disappeared, Malone was working late in the office. Several people in the investigation, including you, testified that you saw him there.
I did?
Yeah.
Oh, I guess I did. It's right here in the transcript.
Do you remember the alibi Ortiz used?
Something about a bar. Oh, yeah, here it is. He had just closed a case. Somebody was running cocaine through one of the ports. Ortiz did the work, handed it off to the marshals, and he was celebrating with a couple of the guys at that bar we used to go to. What was it called? Stock and Barrel. Great cop bar.
So there were reliable witnesses for the whereabouts of both men during the time the crime allegedly took place?
Allegedly. And it's entirely possible that this girl just left her hotel to go out and get drunk completely on her own. Wouldn't be the first time some rich kid rolls into town and wants to get a little crazy. It's L.A., right? But all of these witness accounts dry up around 1 in the morning. So it's totally possible that Ortiz leaves the bar, drunk off his gourd, stumbles onto this pretty young thing who's also drunk, and something bad happens. A hookup goes too far, or an inebriated officer runs her over, or who knows what else. So these alibis are good, but I remain skeptical.
It's worth pointing out that none of what he's suggesting seems to have happened. The investigation transcript goes into pretty solid detail around where both men were and the condition of their cars, and even the mileage on their meters, and couldn't find any sign of wrongdoing. Malone's daughter was sick that night, throwing up for hours, so his entire family and one of his neighbors could all vouch that he was home all night and most of the morning. So there doesn't seem to be any way the officers were involved in the killing itself. Which is when the department changed their theory from they killed her to someone else killed her and paid them to cover it up.
My name is Pablo Machado. I'm a sergeant with the LAPD, and I've been with this precinct for 7 years.
That's Sophie again. There's a really good bit of dialogue in this police transcript, so rather than have me describe it to you, I've just asked her and Gabe to read it. I know, it's stupid, just I'm doing my best here, okay? Sophie will be playing the part of a sergeant in the department, and Gabe will be playing the police chief, Lyle Detmer.
Sergeant, can you describe to us your focus in the precinct for the last 7 years?
I was a beat cop for 3, a detective for 2, and then the last 2 years I've been an in-office liaison for internal affairs.
So you can testify under oath that you are a dirty rat?
Okay.
That was apparently a joke, and whoever made the transcript made sure to record the fact that everyone laughed at it.
Laugh it up, bastards, but I'm the reason this office is still operating. I've assisted with 3 IA investigations, and all 3 times I've found solid evidence against the accusations. A lot of people in this room still have jobs specifically because I defended them.
You didn't defend Mueller.
Mueller was taking bribes. Look, if anyone here, up to and including you, starts getting shady, I will take you down. I'm loyal to the people and the law, not the officers. And I know you hate that, but you can suck it.
So if you found evidence against Detectives Ortiz and Malone, you would not hesitate to put it forward?
That's literally my job.
So, what have you found?
They're innocent.
What?
Look, I know what a corrupt cop looks like. There are signs to it, like changes in behavior and attitude, even the way they do their paperwork. Ortiz and Malone have none of it.
That's conjecture.
I've got evidence, too. How about the fact that neither of them have made even the slightest attempt to hide this case? You want to bury an investigation, you start misplacing files, logging false leads, or just straight up destroying evidence. You certainly don't keep 4 separate reports, accurately filed and fully accessible to everyone in the office. These guys went out of their way to get witness testimonies, names, dates, contact info, and fingerprints so clean that some dingleberry intern was able to match them with another case. They didn't hide or destroy any of it. You're calling this a cover-up, but they didn't cover anything. Incompetent? Sure. They let the case alone for so long they literally forgot about it. But they didn't cover it up.
There are several more hours of debate on this topic in the transcript. But that's what it all boils down to. Ortiz and Malone didn't participate in the crime, profit from the crime, or cover up the crime. Their only infraction, really, was failing to solve the crime, which, to be clear, might very well have resulted in Leona McPherson's death. The autopsy claimed that she was alive for several days in captivity, so it's very possible that the detectives could have saved her if they'd jumped on the case immediately. But doing something poorly is not the same as being corrupt. And given the findings of the internal investigation, it seems clear that they weren't doing the job poorly on purpose. They screwed it up, and they screwed it up bad, but they weren't evil. They didn't kill her. So, I said earlier, the investigation eventually went off the rails, and that's true. After the first day or two, the transcripts went from a detailed look at Leona's disappearance to a wide-angle look at the concept of police corruption in general. By the end, it just kind of peters out, like a river running dry. The accusers have no more evidence that Ortiz and Malone are dirty and kind of forget that they ever thought they were in the first place. Just like the two detectives did, the LAPD as a whole simply forgets about Leona. Her files go back into the archives, and none of her cases are ever closed. As nearly as I can tell, they are never even investigated. Which brings us to our final lead. The one person left who was involved with the case and who acted super suspiciously the whole time. Catherine McPherson, Leona's mother.
My name is Greta Bennett, and I live in Sarasota, Florida. Before that, I was in Columbus, Ohio, where I worked as a reporter for the Columbus Dispatch from 87 until I retired in 2018.
Greta was a senior newspaper reporter in Columbus, Ohio, near the McPherson's hometown of Hill Downs. She covered all the biggest stories of 1994, including the devastating crash of a passenger liner in January. What she did not cover was the death of Leona McPherson.
I've never heard of this person before.
Are you sure? She was a world-renowned violinist.
She certainly looks like it. I've read some of these articles you sent me, and she does have all the hallmarks of a hometown hero. But you need to understand that Columbus is a big city. Next to Chicago, we're the biggest city in the Midwest. Even someone as famous as this girl clearly was could easily get lost in the shuffle.
But you wrote a story about her. She played picnic with the Pops in the Columbus Commons in the summer of 91. You covered the concert.
Yes, I read the article you sent me, but to be fair, she doesn't seem to have been very famous at that point. And you can't expect me to remember every name I've ever put into an article.
Bennett's right. I can't. And it wasn't really even fair to include her in this podcast at all, because in her defense, Leona's death was never actually reported to the city of Columbus. But that's exactly why I put her in here. Bennett never covered the murder because she never knew about it. Los Angeles didn't tell anyone. Catherine didn't tell anyone. Nobody seems to have told anyone. Catherine McPherson filed 2 police reports in California, but back in Ohio, she didn't file any. It's like she went to LA with a daughter and came home never having had one. At the start of this episode, I said that I thought Catherine killed Leona. And now that we arrive at the end, I still think that, mostly. Her behavior on March 19th was too suspicious, the way she tried to leave the hotel without talking to anyone, and the way she pretended not to remember Leona until faced with solid evidence. But that doesn't jive with her behavior on March 18th, the day of the actual disappearance. Catherine is the one who waited for Leona, who demanded the hotel open her door, who called the police and asked them to find her. If she's the one who killed her daughter, why draw so much attention to it if her real plan was to just lie low and hope it all blew over? How can we reconcile March 18th Catherine with March 19th Catherine? The first and most obvious theory is a psychotic break. We can explain all the discrepancies in Catherine's behavior if we assume that in between the 2 police interviews, the trauma of losing her daughter became too great and she snapped. I wasn't able to get any psychologists to be on this podcast, but I've done enough research to know that abruptly forgetting a loved one due to overwhelming trauma is totally a real thing. Not a common thing, but real enough to be considered a known psychiatric phenomenon. So, while I don't have proof that this is what happened to Catherine, I do want to put it out there as a possibility, just for the sake of completeness. And it certainly seems to match her ongoing behavior. From what little information I've been able to find, Catherine continues to maintain to this day that she never had a daughter. She has refused to speak to me, and her husband died when Leona was little, so this is all secondhand information. But it is at the very least consistent. So it might be true. But this is where my podcast is going to go off the rails a little bit. Bear with me here. What I'm about to say sounds like some kind of insane conspiracy theory, and you would be right for thinking I'm completely bonkers. But it's not just Catherine. Everyone in Leona's home community seems to have erased her from their memory as well. The McPhersons lived on the eastern edge of Columbus in a community called Hill Downs. And before she died, their local paper, the Hill Downs Gazette, was filled with stories about the great Leona McPherson and her rise to stardom. After she died, she's never mentioned again. Nobody talks about her. Nobody misses her. Nobody wonders where she is. There is precisely one story that mentions her, but you're not going to believe it. I have scoured their newspaper archive, top to bottom, front to back, absolutely scoured it, and are you sitting down? Because you're going to want to sit down for this. In 1996, 2 full years after Leona died, there is a minor story in the Hill Downs Gazette in which somebody finds the several dozen old articles about Leona and comes to the conclusion that a hacker broke into their database and planted a bunch of fake stories. Seriously, There's even an interview in that article where they talk to Catherine herself. Here's Sophie again, reading an excerpt out loud.
"I don't know why anyone would do this," says Catherine McPherson, looking at the articles I printed out for her. "I've never had a daughter at all, let alone a famous violin player. But look at this. They've even faked a bunch of photos. Why would somebody do this?"
Why indeed? I admit that I'm kind of at the end of my rope here. I am confident that Leona McPherson is real because, despite what a small-town news rag might think, there is no plausible way this mountain of international evidence could be faked. And while I am willing to believe that a mother devastated by loss could utterly forget her own daughter, I am absolutely not willing to believe that an entire town could have the same psychotic break at the same time with the same level of totality. It is implausible to the point of complete impossibility, which means that somebody is lying, or in this case, an entire town full of somebodies. Hundreds of people from Hill Downs, Ohio have decided, for reasons unknown, to pretend that Leona never existed. Have they been threatened? Was there a gas leak? Are they in a cult? I know I sound crazy, but it wouldn't be the first community to cover up a missing child in the service of a higher power. And because I am me, and this is all I have in my life, I've decided to go there. And because NYU is on break right now, Sophie has decided to come with me. I know, you don't have to tell me it's stupid. I already know. There's either nothing going on, in which case this is a big waste of time, or there's some kind of death cult murdering college girls, in which case I am 100% not the right person to get messed up in it. But honestly, after all this research, I feel like I know Leona. I feel, if I can say this without sounding insensitive, that she's my friend. That we could be friends. And friends don't let friends get their eyeballs stolen by nationwide murder cults. So, tune in next time when I'll be recording this from a hotel room instead of a dorm, and we'll see what we can find. I'm not going to let the world forget her, even if everyone else does, even if everyone else wants to. I refuse. I'm going to find the truth, and I'm going to remember. I'm Christina Walsh, and you're listening to Forgotten.